Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Our guest today, U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen, has been a fixture of New Hampshire politics for more than two decades, first as a Democratic state senator, then a three-term governor, and then elected to the U.S. Senate in 2008. Now Shaheen serves on committees covering foreign relations and armed services, along with small business and appropriations. And there's a lot to talk about in all these areas, especially with the president's recent call for more troops in Afghanistan and continued questions about veterans' health care here in New Hampshire. Today in the Exchange, U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen is with us, and let's hear from you. It's your chance to talk with New Hampshire's senior U.S. senator, the number 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Senator Shaheen, welcome back. Good to see you.
Nice to be here. Thanks, Laura. I'm not sure about being a fixture, though.
Well, let's talk about Afghanistan and President Trump Monday night outlining his strategy. You said in a news release, Senator Shaheen, right after, that you support the decision to maintain an American presence in Afghanistan. How come?
Well, we saw before the 9/11 attacks back in 2001 that Afghanistan had become a place where terrorists, the Al-Qaeda, were able to gain a stronghold and operate without any restraint at all. And we don't want that to happen again. And we know that there are terrorist groups that are looking at Afghanistan that are already in parts of the country operating. And we want to make sure that they are not able to do what they did in 2001 and use it as a base of operation for attacks all over the world. So I do think we have an important reason to be there. Basically, what the president announced was pretty much a stay-the-course strategy. He left up to the generals a decision about troop levels, but the rumors are that we will send in some additional troops. 4,000 is the number that I've seen. He talked about eliminating the deadlines that some thought had really hampered us during the Obama administration in terms of telegraphing to our enemies when we were planning to leave. I do think that was important to say it's going to be based on conditions on the ground.
Do you agree with him on that? No,
I do.
Timelines.
What I was disappointed in was that what we didn't hear from the president were any benchmarks for what success would look like. And I think that has been one of the challenges that we've had.
Well, it's been 16 years, and some Americans were saying what you said, you know, yes, this is the right idea. But others were saying, look, we've been there 16 years. What could more time and more troops possibly accomplish that all this effort in the past 16 years has not?
Well, one of the things that we have seen from the Afghan National Security Forces is that they have gotten better at defending their country, and they have taken real casualties as the result of that. But they are strong fighters. The central government, despite all of the challenges, and corruption is continuing to be a big challenge there, has made some progress, real progress in certain areas. Certainly when we talk about education and the number of children in schools, the number of girls in schools, we've seen real progress there. So I do think that despite the president's comments about nation building, that support for our continued diplomatic activities there, our continued aid activities there have been important to and continue to be important to stabilizing the country.
The president said the consequences of a rapid exit are both predictable and unacceptable. Let's hear a little bit more what he said there, Senator Sheen, because I have another question.
A hasty withdrawal would create a vacuum that terrorists, including ISIS and Al-Qaeda, would instantly fill, just as happened before September 11th. And as we know, in 2011, America hastily and mistakenly withdrew from Iraq. As a result, our hard-won gains slipped back into the hands of terrorist enemies.
So, Senator Shaheen, do you agree with that, that it was hasty and a mistake to withdraw from Iraq in 2011?
Well, what that leaves out is why we left Iraq. And we left Iraq in 2011 because we couldn't get the Maliki administration to sign an agreement that would allow our troops to continue to operate there without threat of imprisonment, of sanctions by the Iraqi government. And so that created a situation that made it really impossible for us. We were also dealing with, as I said, Nouri al-Maliki's government was not friendly to the United States. And, you know, I think the current government in Iraq and the current prime minister has taken a much more has made much more of an effort to work with the various ethnic groups within the country to try and close divisions within the country. We've seen their military efforts. They've retaken Mosul now and have done a good job with that. So I think, you know, if we could have gotten all of the agreements in place, should we have stayed in Iraq? I think the answer to that is we may have seen a different outcome had we done that. But we can't go back and change the circumstances on the ground. But what we can do is look at what's happening in Afghanistan and how we can best prevent a further resurgence of terrorist groups in Afghanistan.
You know, another part of this speech that has gotten a lot of play and a lot of discussion is the words the president had for Pakistan, the role he sees it playing in the fight against terrorism, saying we've been paying Pakistan billions of dollars at the same time they've been housing terrorists. Let's hear a little bit of that.
But that will have to change, and that will change immediately. No partnership can survive a country's harboring of militants and terrorists who target U.S. service members and officials. It is time for Pakistan to demonstrate its commitment to civilization, order, and to peace.
What do you think about that, Senator Shaheen? How much is Pakistan part of the problem here?
Well, Pakistan has been a safe haven for the Taliban and the Haqqani network and other terrorist groups to go back across the border into Pakistan. But they also have a record of going after some of those terrorists. They have not been as successful as we would like, and they have had a mixed record on that. But we need to continue to work with them and, I think, continue to pressure them to do more. Now, one of the things the president talked about that makes that relationship more difficult is talking about increasing India's role in Afghanistan because of the historic rivalry between India and Pakistan that dates back to the founding of Pakistan. The division of India that created Pakistan. So I think it is a very difficult region of the world, and it's a region that requires sustained diplomatic activities. That's one of the reasons I'm very concerned about the cuts that the president has proposed for the State Department. I think Congress does not support those cuts, but a recognition that we are better if we are able to engage in diplomatic activities rather than relying on the military to address all of the conflict regions.
Well, and last question on this, and you referenced this a minute ago, President Trump said we are not nation building again. We're killing terrorists. Should we give up on nation building, Senator Shaheen, after, again, 16 years of a lot of effort?
Well, I think it depends on how you define nation building. One of the things that we know is that if we go into a military conflict and we don't have the stability behind that military effort that can provide economic support, aid for countries that need it, that can't help with standing up their governments and providing support for them, that some of those gains that have been so hard fought are going to get rolled back. That's what we saw in Iraq. That's what we continue to see in many parts of the world. So I think it simplifies the situation to say we're not going to do anything other than provide troops. It's important for us, and you know, as we've heard from General Mattis and other generals, if we don't provide for diplomatic activities, for robust diplomatic engagement, then we're going to need to send more bullets. And I think that we need to continue to beef up our diplomacy. We need to understand that these are situations that require long-term engagement, that they're not going to be something that can be resolved in a year or two. You know, we've been on the Korean Peninsula since 1950. So we need to recognize that some situations are going to require long-term sustained engagement in a variety of ways.
Again, this is U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen on our program today, former three-term governor of New Hampshire, first elected to the Senate in 2008. She serves in the Armed Services, Foreign Relations, Appropriations, and Small Business and Entrepreneurship Committees. You can join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, one more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. Well, also in that speech Monday night, the president said love for America requires love for all its people. He talked about, you know, when our men and women in uniform come home, they should not face a country divided. And let's turn to that, Senator Shaheen, because that has been a huge topic in the news, especially since a white supremacy rally in Charlottesville turned violent with the death of a counter-protester and two police officers. Some Republicans, Senator Shaheen, are starting to feel that Democrats are overplaying this tragedy, insinuating that all Republicans are white supremacists. What do you think? Are some in your party going overboard with this, using the tragedy for political gain?
I don't think so, Lauren. I haven't heard anybody suggest that this is the view of all Republicans or the Republican Party. It certainly is not. I think one of the things that we should all be united on is that this kind of hate rhetoric, this white supremacy, the neo-Nazi groups are not what we want to see in America. And the Democratic Party here in New Hampshire condemned, and I condemn, and I think all elected officials condemn the vandalism at the Republican Party in New Hampshire. We do not want to see that, just as we don't want to see the divisiveness that has been so much on display in recent weeks. I thought the president's comments at the start of his speech on Afghanistan were very important for the country to hear. And so I was disappointed when he turned around last night in Phoenix and again adopted divisive rhetoric. And we saw the demonstrators outside again in Phoenix. We heard the mayor of Phoenix urging the president not to come at this time because of concern about what would happen. What we need is the president and our leaders in this country to try and bring people together, to try and help bridge the gaps that exist among people, and to recognize that as Americans, we have much more in common that brings us together than we do that divides us. And what's important is for us to talk with one another, to respect other opinions, and to recognize that We're all interested in making this country a better place.
What can you and other Senate leaders do toward that end? Recognizing you're one person out of 100, and then you've got, you know, the House side, but still at a time when many of our listeners are looking for that healing, that coming together, what can you, Senator Shaheen, do about that?
Well, one thing is try and, in my own behavior and in my own statements, try and do the best that I can to model those views, the respect for other people's opinions, and also at the same time condemn the kind of divisive rhetoric and hate speech that I think is creating or exacerbating divisions that exist. And so I do think it's important for all of us to speak up. You know, we have a First Amendment right in this country, and that's very important, the right to free speech. But that does not include shouting fire in a crowded theater and saying things that are going to spur violence, that are going to potentially lead to hurting other people. And I think that's the dividing line. And that's what we saw in Charlottesville. What we saw is someone that was so agitated by the demonstration that was going on there by the white supremacist groups that he got in his car and he drove into the counter protesters. And that's what caused the death of Heather Heyer, very sadly. And we don't want that. We want people to be able to express themselves, you know, to do it in a way that is peaceful, that doesn't endanger other people, and to respect that.
Some of this unrest has come about when Confederate statues are taken down. Now, Senator Cory Booker and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi both want statues of Confederate leaders in the U.S. Capitol building to come down. What do you think, Senator Shaheen? Should they come down or stay up?
Well, I think there's a difference between remembering our history and memorializing that aspects of our history that may not be something that we want to continue to celebrate. And certainly, I think we want to remember the Civil War. We want to remember what happened. But I don't think we want to continue to celebrate those people who really engaged in treasonous activities against the Union of the United States.
By seceding,
right. And so I think putting those statues someplace where, as we recognize and remember other parts of our history, we can do that, but to do it in a way that doesn't glorify what happened.
So don't smash them to bits, but put them somewhere less prominent? Is that what you're saying?
I think probably a good way to do it would be to create a group within Congress to discuss all aspects of this issue, to hear from everybody about what they think, and then to make a decision and recommendations about what should happen. But I personally don't think we should smash them to bits, but I do think we should put them in a place where they remain as part of our history, but we're not glorifying what happened there.
You know, one critic of this statue removal proposal said, hey, if we're going to do that, why not also rename the Russell Senate Office Building, since Richard Russell, the former Georgia senator, was an ardent segregationist his whole career. So, you know, this person was saying, look, how far are we going to go with this thing?
I think there are questions about that, but I also think it's important to recognize the progress that we made in this country. And one of the things that I think we should all be very proud of is that we have moved in a way that is more tolerant, that recognizes the contributions that African Americans, that Latinos, that anybody who is not white in America have made to this country. And that is, I think, progress in terms of the future of this country, because it is immigrants. It is, whether it's African Americans, whether it's, you know, my husband's Lebanese relatives, whether it's my family who came from England centuries ago. All of those people have contributed to the America that we can all enjoy and live in today.
Lots of calls, Senator Shaheen. We'll go to them after a short break. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, a broad discussion with New Hampshire's senior U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen. We've been looking at foreign policy. Coming up, we'll also talk about health care and veterans health care. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
I'm Virginia Prescott, here to tell you that after 8-plus years, word of mouth is ending its run as a weekday show. But I am thrilled to announce a revamped, retooled, and relaunched word of mouth weekend show beginning September 2nd. From now on, we are going local, answering your questions about the state and exploring the culture, history, and geography of the place we call home. Listen in to the new word of mouth, Saturdays at 11, right after Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. New Hampshire U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen is here, and we're taking your questions and comments. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send an email to exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Senator Shaheen, let's go right to our listeners. And Mike is in Hillsboro. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Mike.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
Yes, good morning, Senator, and thank you for your work on behalf of New Hampshire citizens. I wanted to raise the question of single-payer health care as an important issue, which I'm sure you have looked at carefully. My thoughts are that this is probably the best answer to the current health care muddle. The objections you always hear are that it would cost too much money. It's infeasible financially. And my thoughts on that are, how are we paying for health care now? We're funding extraordinary profit organizations, the big health care, big insurance companies. Their CEOs are getting tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars a year. And we also have kind of an invisible tax on our businesses. Most of us get our health insurance at least partially through our employers, so they have to charge more for their goods and services to cover this this expensive
So someone's already paying, Mike. So why not move to a single-payer system? And Mike, I want to let you know, got an email from Fred in Canterbury also, who says, will the senator support Senator Sanders' upcoming single-payer health insurance proposal? So thanks, Fred. Thanks, Mike. What do you think, Senator Shaheen?
Well, as I'm sure you remember, when we were trying to pass the Affordable Care Act back in 8 years ago now, 7 years ago, one of the things that we tried to do was to include a public option that would be available for people, which would be a first step, I think, on the idea of a single payer. We also tried to reduce or to expand Medicare to go, I think, down to people who were age 55 and include them in Medicare. And both of those I supported, I think, are important, and both of them failed because we weren't able to get the votes, and I think that has been the challenge. One of my hopes is that as the result of the disagreement around health care coverage for people in this country, that we are going to look more carefully at better ways of providing health care for people. I think I think many of us who voted for the Affordable Care Act thought it was an important step forward in expanding health care coverage in this country, but recognized it wasn't the end game. It wasn't going to cover everyone in the country, and it was going to need changes. And we're seeing at this point the fact that we need to make changes in that law. And I'm hopeful that part of where we are going to go now is to take a look at what else we can do to provide better health care coverage for people and address the costs that so many people have. So when we get back, we are going to have hearings. I think it's a positive step that we have heard from both the Republican leadership and the Democratic leadership in the Senate, from Lamar Alexander and Patty Murray, who lead the Health Education and Labor and Pensions Committee that they are going to do two hearings. They've already announced those because we need to move very quickly to address what's happening in the marketplaces with insurers pulling out and with people not being able to afford their health insurance. And hopefully we are going to see the Trump administration agree that they are going to continue to provide the support, what's called those cost-sharing reduction payments that go to help people afford the cost of insurance so they can stay enrolled, because that's very important. So there is a lot of work we have to do. I think the debate around single payer is going to be part of that, but I think we're going to have to change the makeup of the Congress if we're going to get that done.
Well, and when we had Senator Hassan on recently, a couple folks asked the same question. How will you vote on Senator Sanders legislation if it comes to the floor? How would you vote if this did come to the floor, the single payer proposal?
You know, I would be inclined to support it. I haven't actually looked at his legislation, so I don't know whether I think what he's proposed is just a message piece of legislation or whether it's actually got the requirements that it would take to implement that. But clearly, we're going to have to do a number of things. And I think one of the pieces of providing for choices for people in the marketplace is a public option. And I think that's important for us to look at. And maybe that comes in the way of expanded Medicare for people who are under 65. I think we've got to look at a whole range of options.
A public option, remind me, that was sort of you could buy your health insurance from this company or that company, but you could also buy it from a government-sponsored insurer. Okay. One more thing on this, Senator Shaheen. I'm glad you mentioned the CSRs, cost-sharing reductions. Democrats, many Republicans, including Governor Sununu, have urged the Trump administration to continue funding these CSRs. But there was an analysis by the Congressional Budget Office just recently that seems to say, I took a look at it last night, seems to say it might not be so terrible for people who get coverage on the Affordable Care Act exchanges. The CBO says, quoting here, most people would pay net premiums after the tax credit that were similar or less than what they would pay otherwise. So CBO seems to be saying, don't worry so much about these CSRs going away.
Well, one of the challenges is that it's created uncertainty in the marketplace. That is an issue for the insurers. And we've seen a number of insurance companies who have filed two sets of rates, one that says they're going to those payments will continue and the rates will not go up as high, and another that says if those payments are stopped, then the rates will go up much higher. And that's the real challenge. What we don't want is we don't want more people to be kicked off of their insurance because they can't afford to pay, basically, or more insurers to leave the marketplaces because that means that there are fewer choices for individuals. So what we need to try and do, I think, in the short term is to stabilize the market. I have legislation that I introduced months ago called the Marketplace Certainty Act that would put into legislation those payments and say we are going to continue those. That was part of all of the Republican plans for their health insurance or health care, and also that would expand those so that more people could get help with affording insurance.
So CBO seemed to say in this recent report, look, even if the premiums do go up, most people will get a tax subsidy, so they won't feel it. So again, don't worry so much about these CSRs going away.
I haven't seen the CBO report, so I really can't comment on that.
President Trump has called these CSRs bailouts for insurers. Are they bailouts for insurers, Senator Shaheen?
No, they were pass-throughs that insurance companies used so that we could encourage more people to be able to afford health insurance. That's basically what they are. They are subsidies to people to be able to afford health insurance. And again, they were included in the Republican health care bill that was defeated recently. In all of the versions of that in the Senate, they were included in the House bill.
So is this an idea that
suggests that this is a partisan issue is just being disingenuous.
And it sounds like bipartisan hearings coming up in early September, this is an issue that might be included in those bipartisan hearings?
I would certainly think so. And that raises an important point, Laura, and that is that one of the issues we have seen with the effort to address health care by the Republican administration and the Republican leadership in Congress has been a process that has been done behind closed doors, that has not even included members of the Republican caucus in the Senate, for sure. And what we need is a transparent process. We need to have hearings. So I applaud the decision to go ahead and schedule hearings in September. We need to allow constituent groups to weigh in on what they want to see. And we really need to have a broad discussion about how we can address the concerns about the Affordable Care Act, how we can address the cost issues, and how we can make sure that more Americans get health care coverage.
Another related question on this Medicaid expansion. The state of New Hampshire, as you know, Senator Shaheen, took a different approach on Medicaid expansion under the ACA, a bipartisan agreement that instead of using taxes, the state would get a voluntary contribution from both hospitals and insurers to fill the gap once the federal contribution went down. Now the Center for Medicaid Services is saying, we don't think that's legal in New Hampshire. We're not really sure if you can do that. Should New Hampshire have anticipated that this might be problematic?
Well, first of all, I think what New Hampshire did was very important. And what we want to see is the kind of debate we had in New Hampshire, where we were Governor Hassan was able to work with the Republican legislature. Both the Speaker of the House and the Senate President, who are Republicans, supported the expansion of Medicaid. They came up with a uniquely New Hampshire proposal. They needed a waiver to get that done. I think it's important for at the federal level to give states waivers to do that kind of a proposal that works for us in New Hampshire, and we should be able to continue to do that. I think Governor Sununu's weighing in on that is important, and hopefully the Trump administration will reverse what they're saying, because it's that kind of flexibility that states should have as they're trying to figure out how we can provide health care coverage. And Medicaid expansion has been huge in New Hampshire in providing treatment for people with substance use disorders. It's been very important as we address the heroin and opioid epidemic here. It's been important in reducing people in emergency rooms. I think the number I've heard most recently is 40% of emergency room people coming to emergency rooms are down 40% in the state. It's been important in providing health care coverage for people who can get on Medicaid. And then as they're doing better, they get a job that provides them private health insurance. They can get off of the expanded Medicaid program and get into private health insurance. So it has been a huge success, and we need to see it continue.
So, Senator Shaheen, have you had a chance yet to talk with CMS about this?
I haven't talked with well, I've had a brief conversation with the new head of CMS, Seema Verma, when she was being when she came to meet with me before she got approved. I have not had a conversation with her since her nomination was approved.
What would your message be to CMS? And do you have plans to sit down with them and say, look, New Hampshire really needs to stick with this plan?
I would assume I will do that. I did that with the previous administration. But my message would be exactly what I said. This is something that was agreed to in a bipartisan way in the state of New Hampshire. It has shown tremendous success in terms of the outcomes and the benefits that we talked about when we passed the Affordable Care Act and talked about the expansion of Medicaid. And that's what the decisions should be made based on, not based on some arbitrary interpretation of what the requirements are.
Let's take another call. And this is Fiona in New London. Hi, Fiona. You're on the air with Senator Shaheen. Welcome.
Hi. I wanted to, first of all, thank the senator for all her work she's done for healthcare access and always supporting Planned Parenthood.
Thank
and
you.
New Hampshire has some of the lowest teen pregnancy rates and STI rates right now in the country. And my concern is with Trump's attempt to roll back the ACA, taking away no-cost birth control, funding for teen pregnancy prevention, I'm just wondering how this will affect our country and how you see New Hampshire being able to maintain its good health outcomes.
Fiona, thank you for the call.
Yes, thank you, and thank you for your support for Planned Parenthood and for family planning and for making sure that we do address and reduce teen pregnancy. I think it's one of the things that killed the Republican health care bill, because we heard Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski say early on and very clearly that they were not going to support something that took away funding for Planned Parenthood and the choice that that provides to women. Here in New Hampshire, we have around 12,000 women who depend on Planned Parenthood for their health care, and they go there for mammograms or for screening, for cancer screenings, for not just contraceptives, but for all kinds of health care needs. And we need to make sure that that continues for women in New Hampshire and across this country. So I will continue to advocate for that and continue to advocate that women should get the same access to health care that men do. You know, one of the things that I found very disappointing in the whole debate in the Senate around the Republican health care bill was not only did they refuse to let any women, Republican women, much less Democratic women, in the room as they were debating and putting together their bill, but they also refused to include maternity benefits, refused to recognize they were going to send us back to a time where women pay more for our health care than men do. So none of that is good for the health of women in America, and we need to make sure that women get the same access to health care that men do.
Boy, well, when those bipartisan hearings on health care start up again in early September, I'm guessing this is going to come up again, Senator Shaheen, for people who feel very strongly that abortion is wrong. They don't want any connection with federal funding on abortion.
But let me just interrupt you, Laura. The support for Planned Parenthood does not support abortion, and it hasn't for decades. So that is just a misnomer. And people who think that people who go to Planned Parenthood clinics are only going because they want an abortion is just not accurate. And we need to correct people that that is not what is happening. Women go, they provide abortions for some women, but those are not paid for with federal tax dollars.
The argument will come up again, I'm sure, when the Senate goes into those bipartisan health hearings. I'm going to set it aside for now, Senator Shaheen, but it definitely will come up again, and
I'm
we'll
sure
revisit
it
on this show.
But it's important to be factual about what's going on. I mean, the unfortunate thing about this debate is that it's suddenly become about providing contraceptive coverage for women. It's become about all women's health care, and that's not what we're talking about when we're talking about abortion and taxpayer-funded abortions. Those do not exist in this country.
A couple emails I want to share with you, Senator Shaheen. And as we turn to veterans' health care, while we're talking about health care, we should definitely talk about that. Here's an email from this person, didn't give a name. This person says, whenever a beneficial national idea like expanded Medicare is proposed, the response is, we can't afford it. We never hear we can't afford it when it comes to expanding the military and waging war. This person says, the military, weaponry, troop support, decent care for veterans is all exponentially more expensive than the positive activities that are deemed unaffordable. This is from Julie in Durham. I apologize, Julie. Just saw your name there. And then here's someone else, Matt, who says, bureaucracies don't work efficiently. The Veterans Administration can't fire poor employees. Why would another large healthcare bureaucracy be better or accountable? So this folds us into the whole issue concerning veterans' health care in New Hampshire, Senator Shaheen. And you met with the whistleblowers yesterday, didn't you?
I did.
You did. Yeah. What came out of that meeting?
Well, this was an effort to follow up on the visit from Secretary Shulkin, who came and toured the VA hospital, had a town meeting with employees there and veterans, and also met with the whistleblowers. So it was an effort to continue to look at what needs to be done in response to the concerns that have been raised about the VA hospital.
So I'll follow up with you after a short break. A couple more questions about the VA, including whether New Hampshire needs a full-fledged veterans hospital instead of just a medical center. That's an ongoing issue, as you know. We'll take more of your calls and emails as well. So thank you for those emails, Matt and Julie. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We'll be back in a minute with U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today we're talking with New Hampshire's senior U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen and hearing from you. Your questions and comments are welcome. We've been talking about foreign policy, also about bipartisan efforts to reform health care. We love your thoughts on these and other issues. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Senator Shaheen, just before the break, we were talking about your meeting yesterday with the whistleblowers at the Manchester VA Medical Center, talking about some of the problems, severe problems that came to light in a Boston Globe Spotlight article. Just help us unpack this a little bit, Senator Shaheen, because when this came out in the Boston Globe, a lot of people went, wow, I mean, was nobody aware of this? It seems like it'd been going on for a long time. I'd love for you to just kind of trace the dots in terms of your own awareness and involvement in this issue.
Sure. Well, first of all, let me just say, and I think everybody feels this way, we need to make sure that our veterans get the best care possible and the care that they deserve. So I think that is a value that most people in, certainly in New Hampshire and most people in the country support. And so it was very troubling to hear from the whistleblowers. I had a meeting with them in the spring of 2016 where they raised a number of the concerns. And we talked about different ways forward. We talked to members of the staff of the Veterans Committee. And when they were comfortable coming forward publicly, which was in September of 2016, we got a letter from their attorney. We then forwarded those concerns, that letter, to the Office of Special Counsel, which is the federal office that deals with whistleblowers, and to the VA.
The medical inspector, is that it?
Well, to the Office of the Inspector General at the VA. We copied Secretary Shulkin, who at that time was the head of medicine at the VA, and we also copied Daniel Ocker, who was the head of the VA hospital here in Manchester, on those letters. And from that, a number of investigations began.
And what surprised, I think, a lot of people when the Boston Globe thing came out is that those internal investigations found, I'm quoting here, no evidence to substantiate the allegations. How surprised were you, Senator Shaheen, that, you know, these internal inspecting agencies didn't find any problems given the severity of what the whistleblowers described?
Well, I wouldn't characterize it that way, Laura. In fact, a number of those investigations are still going on. The Office of Special Counsel doesn't comment on their investigations while they're ongoing. They have not yet reported out. There was one Office of Medical Inspector, the OMI, that did an investigation, and they came back with a preliminary report that said they didn't find evidence of some of the allegations. But there is a follow-up investigation that is continuing from that, and there is an effort to bring in an outside group to take a look at some of the medical concerns that have been raised about how people were treated. And I think that will be very important in addressing some of the issues that have been raised by the whistleblowers.
So you met with them in the spring of 2016, and then they came forward in the fall of 2016 with this letter, and then it got sent to the whistleblower agency, so to speak. And it's still sort of kicking around. I mean, meanwhile, the Boston Globe comes out with this thing. It just makes you wonder, like, why does it take so long? Meanwhile, people are being paralyzed due to poor care.
Well, again, those are allegations, and I think it's important to point that out.
Allegations made by the docs.
Yes. And we need to investigate those, and we need to find out if, in fact, that was happening as the result of poor care and do something about that. That is absolutely unacceptable. And we need to do everything possible to expedite the investigation. And I think Secretary Shulkin heard that when he was here, and he took decisive action, which I think was very helpful in removing leadership at the VA hospital and while the investigation is continuing. So we need to let that continue to go forward and address the recommendations that are happening as the result of these investigations.
And I think correct me if I'm wrong, I think most federal agencies have internal inspector general offices. Two questions on that.
They do.
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the things that makes this a little different is the whistleblower aspect of it. And that's why the Office of Special Counsel is the appropriate office to do the investigation.
So is there an argument for urging these investigative authorities, be they the special counsel, be they internal, for, you know, giving them more resources, hurrying them up? I mean, this is a long time for people who fought for our country to wait to see whether they were wronged or not.
There absolutely is. And one of the things that I have supported is legislation, in fact, sponsored legislation that would urge every agency to have an inspector general. That's the person in the agency that does the is charged with investigating any things that are wrong within that agency. And I think, unfortunately, we have not seen agencies within the federal government be as quick as they should be to get those people in place. I think we're seeing that. We saw some concerns with that in the last administration, and certainly we're seeing that in this administration where nominations have been very slow.
Coming out of all this, Senator Shaheen, here's the big question, and this has been going on for a long time. Should New Hampshire, is it finally time for New Hampshire to have a full-fledged veterans hospital? This has been part of the alleged problem at the Manchester VA, is that it's not a full-fledged hospital facility.
Well, absolutely. The first legislation I introduced when I got to the Senate in 2009 was for a full-service veterans hospital in New Hampshire. It is legislation that I have reintroduced in multiple Congresses.
What's the holdup?
Resources. The challenge has been the resources. So I will continue to advocate for that and also to advocate for making sure that veterans, if they're not able to get the particular care they need from the VA hospital here, that they are able to go to a doctor wherever they live and get the care that they need. And that's what the Veterans Choice Program was designed to do. It has had a rocky implementation, and we need to take a look. It's going to be reauthorized, and so there's going to be a real examination of how to make that work better. But for us in New Hampshire, because we are the only state in the lower 48 that has no full-service veterans hospital or military hospital that can treat our veterans, we need to make sure that whatever is done provides the care that our veterans here need.
Well, completely switching gears, Senator Shaheen, here's an email from Hayden in Hanover, and thank you, Hayden. He says, would you be willing to support legislation that would remove marijuana from the list of Schedule I drugs and or decriminalize marijuana possession at the federal level now that the New Hampshire state government has decriminalized possession of small amounts of marijuana? Hayden, thank you. This is a big policy issue that we're seeing playing out in the states and now nationally.
You know, Hayden, I'd have to have a lot of questions answered before I would support that. I want to see what's happening in Colorado and Washington State with their experiences. I think medical marijuana is one thing because, and even that has been slow to roll out here because of the requirements to set up a system to do that. But as long as we have a heroin and opioid epidemic to the extent that we do, I'm not going to support any other drug coming into the market that can be a gateway drug that can get people into some other drug that is going to be more debilitating. So I would have to have a lot of questions answered before I would support that.
Well, and I think he's not talking so much about legalization, but removing marijuana from this Schedule I drug list, which, you know, I think puts it right up there with other very scary drugs, and that, you know, has created problems at the state level for medical marijuana and so forth. So it's just made it sticky.
Sure. And I certainly don't subscribe to putting people in prison who get arrested with small amounts of marijuana. I think that's a bad use of resources. But I think that's a different issue than saying we're going to make marijuana available to everybody, anybody at any time, anywhere. And I think we still have unanswered questions before making that decision.
Here's an email from Rick on an important issue to the North Country, Senator Shaheen. He says, could you ask Senator Shaheen about cell service in the North Country? As reported by NHPR back on April 1st, 2015, Senator Shaheen was part of an announcement about three new cell service sites that would be up and running by the end of the summer of 2015. 2 years later, Rick says, we still don't have cell service. It was funded by public and private funds because there were public funds involved. He says, what's the delay? Boy, we do hear a lot about cell service and internet service in the North Country, a real barrier to economic
prosperity. It is. It's a huge issue. And we've made some progress, so that's the good news. But we don't have it everywhere, and we need it. We can't attract businesses into the North Country if we don't have cell service for people. The barrier has been getting private companies to make the investment to come into northern New Hampshire because of the usage, which is not real high, except in the summer. When tourists come into northern New Hampshire, then the usage goes up, and we have made some progress in that respect. We had an announcement last year up in actually, it was in Groveton where we announced the expansion of cell service in part of northern New Hampshire. We are waiting on other cell towers to be completed in order to get continued service, and we're waiting for other private carriers to be willing to come into New Hampshire and to make the investment. I think at some point we need to provide more public dollars to support rural areas, just as we did in the 30s with rural electrification. We need to support not just cell service, but high-speed internet, because for so many rural areas, they can't compete, they can't attract the businesses that we need without that access to high-speed internet.
It really is part of infrastructure.
It's
I wonder,
huge.
You know, when does it get folded into traditional infrastructure bills, which everybody loves? Those have bipartisan support still.
Well, that's right, and that's why I was so hopeful that we would see an infrastructure package with this Congress and this administration, and I still hope we can do that because there is a lot of support, not just for the need that we have for roads and bridges and water systems and wastewater treatment systems, but for high-speed internet. That is a huge issue all over this country, and we need to address it, and we need to address it at the federal level.
Let's take another call. This is Oliver in Concord. Oliver, thank you for being with us. Go ahead. You're on the air with Senator Shaheen.
Good morning, Laura.
Good morning.
Thank you very much, Senator Shaheen.
Good morning.
I am a veteran, 24-year retiree of the Marines, and I receive my retiree health care, but I also go down to the Manchester VA. And so as this debate has come up, I've heard a lot about Veterans Choice, but I'd like to get your opinion on Veterans Choice in terms of my understanding why some veterans are very much against it is because in past the funding has not been adequate enough, and that therefore makes the process and procedures to send you out into the community far more cumbersome. What is your stand on the Veterans Choice program as it is stated right now?
Yeah, Oliver, thank you. And we heard in this whole Manchester situation that those delays were, you know, extremely problematic for some veterans.
Well, they were. And the issue there actually is not resources. We just funded an additional $2.5 billion to complete funding for the Veterans Choice program through this year. The issue there has been the way the program got implemented and the fact that we've had a whole other contractor other than the VA who has been involved with having to sign off on decisions about where veterans could go through the CHOICE program to get their health care. That, again, needs to change, and we have worked very hard in New Hampshire to try and address the concerns we've heard from veterans, but it's still not as good as it needs to be. And I think that's one of the things that will be explored as we look at reauthorizing the CHOICE program. There's a discussion about whether that should be folded in with the program that the VA already had in place to allow for treatment in the community. For example, the VA in Manchester has had a contract with Concord Hospital for a number of years to provide care. So all of that will be part of a debate around reauthorization of the CHOICE Act. But the fundamental goal needs to be, how do we make sure our veterans get the care that they need? And if we need to make sure if we're going to continue the CHOICE program that we address what have been barriers to veterans who are approved by the VA to go into that program and are stopped by Health Net, which is the contractor here that has to sign off because they say they haven't got the approval. So those are the kinds of bureaucratic obstacles that we need to address, and we've got to continue to work on that.
Well, Oliver, thank you for the call and for your service. And Senator Sheen, there's so many more questions that I could pose to you from our listeners. And so forth. But here's one that just came in from Rick in Kearsarge. He says, while it seems early, the president is already holding 2020 reelection rallies like the one last night. Can you speculate on any Democrats or any Republicans who might be gearing up for a run against the president? Wow, Rick, thank you.
No, Rick, I'm not going to speculate.
No speculation.
Listen, there are a lot of people talking about it, but I think what we ought to be focused on is what we need to do in the country right now. That's what I'm trying to do, is to stay focused on what this Congress needs to do to address the challenges that we face. And I love the New Hampshire primary. I love the presidential campaign, but we need to limit, I think, that campaign so that it doesn't be ongoing every day, all the time. I think it's important to put the campaign behind us so that we can work together to address the problems facing this country.
Well, and on that note, Senator Shaheen, you know, we do hear so much negativity in the news about political dysfunction in Washington, about name calling, about demonizing people who disagree with you or who are reporting the news. Reporters have been targets as well. What's good about working inside the Beltway, about working in national politics today, Senator Shaheen?
Well, that we still can get things done. And, you know, I'm the ranking member, so that means I'm the top Democrat on the Small Business and Entrepreneurship Committee. My chairman is a man named Jim Risch, who was governor of Idaho. We both served as governors. We came in at the same time. He and I disagree on most policy issues, but we work very closely together on the Small Business Committee because we agree in the importance of small businesses, and we get most things done in that committee by consensus with very little disagreement on either side of the aisle.
Wow. That's the first time I've heard that in a long time. I really appreciate you joining us, Senator Shaheen. We'll check in with you later on, maybe in the fall, about health care and some of these other issues concerning Veterans Choice that we talked about. Thank you so much for being here.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Laura.
That's U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.